It's on to the next showdown on Capitol Hill, with the ashes of the super committee to bring down the federal debt barely cool. The topic in question now is the extension of the payroll tax cut. It expires at the end of this month. The president wants Congress to renew and expand it. The showdown is about how to make up for that lost revenue, $265 billion to be exact. Democrats say tax millionaires. Republicans say no way. Haven't we been here before? Joining us is Howard Gleckman, resident fellow at the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center and a contributor to the tax policy blog Tax Vox. We'll link you to that on our website, hereandnow.org. Howard, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks, Monica. Great to be with you.
There's a payroll tax cut in effect for this year only, and the proposal is to extend it. So first, explain what the payroll tax is and what's the cut in place right now.
Sure. Let's go back one step. Everybody has to pay two different kinds of payroll taxes, one for Social Security and one for Medicare. The Social Security tax, which is the one we're talking about here, is paid half by employees and half by employers. Last year, President Obama, with the support of the Congress, agreed to reduce the employee share of the payroll tax by about 2 percentage points. That tax cut expires at the end of this year, and the argument everybody's having now is what to do with it after it expires.
I think I missed this cut because just a few weeks ago, somebody pointed out that I was getting this payroll tax cut, and I hadn't seen it in my paycheck, and I don't scrutinize what I'm paying for Social Security every month. So am I typical? Do most Americans even know they're getting this break?
This is an interesting question. I suspect that most Americans don't know that they're getting this break. It does show up in your pay stub. You are actually having less money withheld than you were before, but a lot of people don't really notice it. I think the other thing that happened particularly early this year is while people had a little more take-home pay, they were spending so much in gasoline, for example, people really didn't notice it. Now the gas prices are a little lower. It may be having some effect.
So what are President Obama and the Democrats proposing to do about it?
Well, so what they want to do is they want to extend it for employees and also make it a little more generous. And what they want to do is create a new tax break, payroll tax break, for employers. So they have to pay fewer payroll taxes for people that they currently have in their workforce and also for people that they hire starting next year. One of the big controversial issues is how to pay for this. The Obama administration wants to pay for it with a tax on millionaires. Republicans, who seem to be coming around, they had originally opposed extending the payroll tax at all, now say they favor extending the payroll tax but oppose paying for it with this millionaire surtax. So the argument I think we're going to have over the next few weeks is not on whether to extend it, but it's going to be on whether to pay for it and how to pay for it.
And one Republican says, Senator Scott Brown from Massachusetts, it wasn't paid for before, so why is it paid for now? It'll pay for itself. Does that seem to be the sentiment of most Republicans?
Well, this is what seems to happen in Congress. You may remember just a few weeks ago, we were obsessing about reducing the budget deficit. Now what we seem to be saying is, well, let's just add another $250 billion to the budget deficit over the next year. Not a problem. So my sense is that the way this is going to end up, in fact, is that Republicans in Congress will block efforts to pay for this with a millionaire tax. Democrats will never agree to paying for it with reduced spending. So they'll do what Congress almost always does and just not pay for it at all and increase the deficit by another $250 billion.
Is it expected to pass?
I think it is now. I think that the political pressure on Republicans is very high. They were getting the worst of the argument when they were saying that they were opposed to extending this tax cut. Democrats, after all, were saying, now let's see if we understand this. You never met a tax cut you didn't like, except for the one that helps nearly every working class family in America. That's a hard argument to defend. I think the Republicans realized over the last week or so that they really didn't want to make that argument. So they seem to be slowly giving up on the position that they had taken in opposition to extending the payroll tax cut. I think the question now is, will it be expanded, for one, and then the bigger question is, are they going to pay for it? as I say, I think they probably won't in the end pay for it at all.
Well, what does that mean down the line, though? Because this is money that would be going into the Social Security Fund. So if this extension and the expansion were to pass, that would mean over $350 billion less in the long run for Social Security. And that's a program Democrats support and don't want to see put in any more jeopardy. Is there a plan to make up that money?
No. There are two issues here. One of them is that Democrats say this tax cut will be temporary. So, yes, $350 billion or $250 billion is a lot of money, but over the course of the next 20 or 30 years, it's not really a lot. Well, that assumes that it's going to be temporary. I'm not sure it really will be. Plus, you know, I don't know about you, but in my book, $250 billion is a lot of money.
Mine too.
Yeah. The other issue, though, which is a little more troubling, is this question about what does happen to the Social Security Trust Fund. The Democrats say what they'll do is they'll take the $250 billion out of the general fund and move it into the trust fund, so the Social Security Trust Fund will be made whole. The problem with that argument is the general fund of the federal government doesn't have $250 billion. It has a $1.4 trillion deficit. What really is going to happen here is the government is just going to have to borrow somewhere down the road another $250 billion to make up for this, to help make the Social Security system whole. It hurts the credibility of Social Security, which of course is already facing a serious credibility problem. There are so many people out there who say Social Security is not going to have any money when I need it. That's not really true. But when the government takes a quarter of a trillion dollars in revenues out of the trust fund, that simply makes it easier for people to argue that, see, it's true. There's not going to be the money there when you need it. And Democrats are playing a dangerous game by agreeing to allow this money to be, in effect, withdrawn from the Social Security system.
What is the reasoning behind this idea, then? Why does President Obama and the Democrats want to do this if it could further jeopardize Social Security?
Monica, this is all about the election. The Democrats proposed this trade-off of extending the payroll tax cuts and raising taxes on millionaires, not because they thought that this package would ever pass Congress, but because they thought it was a good political argument to make. And I think, frankly, they were right. This is about short-term political advantage. The payroll tax could have been designed in other ways, but it would have been more complicated to explain. This is a simple way for people to understand it. So they do what politicians always did, was they went for the short-term advantage, and they'll worry about the long-term Social Security problems some other time.
Howard Gluckman of the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center is with us. And Howard, you were just explaining how this tax cut may undermine confidence in Social Security, which the tax pays for. And there's a backstory to this cut. It's a new version of something President Obama got when he came into office. What was that?
That was called a Making Work Pay tax credit. It was very obscure. Nobody really understood how it worked. But it provided more take-home pay for low- and moderate-income working families. It was very well targeted to those families who were likely to spend the money. It also had the advantage of not dipping into the Social Security Trust Fund because it wasn't a payroll tax break. It was simply an income tax break based on wages. It worked fairly well. The problem was it didn't have any political kick. So the president decided that he would let that expire at the end of last year and replace it with the payroll tax cut, which is not as well targeted, but which people understand better. This targeting issue is an important one to keep in mind because, remember, the idea of doing this is as a jobs bill, what people used to call economic stimulus before economic stimulus was a phrase you couldn't utter. So the idea is that if you give people a tax cut, they'll go out and spend the money. They'll increase demand for goods and services, and the companies that produce those goods and services will go out and hire more people. If you do that, what you want to be careful of is you want to make sure that the tax cut goes to people who are most likely to spend the money. Low-income people, moderate-income people will spend that extra $10 or $20 that they get every week in their paycheck. High-income people are not likely to spend it. They're much more likely to save it. Saving is good for the economy in the long run, but it doesn't do what you need today, which is to increase demand so that companies will go out and hire more people to produce the stuff that people buy. So that's the challenge here. You want to target any kind of a tax break like this to people who are most likely to spend the money. Making Work Pay did that very well. The payroll tax cut doesn't do that very well, partially because there are no income limits on who gets it. As long as you're paying payroll tax, you get the tax break. And also because a big piece of this is a tax cut that is targeted towards employers and not employees. This employer payroll tax cut was actually tried by the Carter administration back in 1977. It's been very well studied, and the evidence is it didn't work very well. We gave a lot of money to companies to hire people they would have hired anyway.
And what works better, a stimulus check that they mail to you and you receive and immediately want to spend?
Well, that's an argument that economists have all the time. Is it better to get a little bit taken out of your paycheck every week, or is it better to get one big check? If you get the additional money in your paycheck, you may not notice it. That's what you said happened to you. That happens to a lot of people. On the other hand, you're more likely to spend it. Economists have found that when you get one big check, what you tend to do is put it in the bank. Again, that's good for the long run. Savings is a nice thing to do. But in the short run, when you want to get people spending, most economists will tell you the better way to do it is to put a little bit in people's paychecks every week or every couple of weeks, and they'll spend that money.
This is a time-limited tax break. And in your blog on TaxVox, you ask the question, how are time-limited tax breaks like vampires? How are they? I mean, I thought that was an interesting concept.
Time-limited tax breaks are like vampires because they never go away. You can't kill them. There are probably more than 50 or 60 of them now, many of them for business, some of them for individuals. They're usually put in the tax code to address a specific problem, and they never die.
Just like the Bush tax cuts.
That's right. The Bush tax cuts are temporary. This payroll tax cut we've been talking about is temporary. There's a fix to something called the alternative minimum tax, which keeps about 25 million middle-class people from having to pay the alternative minimum tax. For businesses, there's a research and development tax credit. There are tax credits for buying energy-efficient windows and furnaces and air conditioners. Now it costs us about $350 billion in lost federal revenue to pay for all of these temporary tax cuts. And the payroll tax cut is just one more on top of it all.
There are actually many temporary tax cuts that might expire at the end of next year, including the Bush tax cuts. And if this payroll tax cut is extended, it would come at a time as well where Congress might be mandated to agree on a deficit cutting plan, and that could go into effect. I mean, what are we setting ourselves up for as a country to have all of these temporary tax cuts expiring around the same time?
It's not an accident that all of this is going to happen after the next election. And what we're setting ourselves up for is a huge train wreck. We have, as you say, the Bush tax cuts are expiring. We have this payroll tax cut that is likely to be extended for another year. It will expire. And then we have these automatic spending cuts. They're all going to happen at the same time, not accidentally, right after the next presidential election and the next congressional election. Figuring out what we're going to do with this is going to be one of the great political challenges of our time. It's not an overstatement to say that what's at stake here is really people's perception of what government ought to be doing. We could come out of this with many fewer taxes, a smaller Medicare program, a smaller Medicaid program, a smaller defense budget, which would really be a very different perspective on what we've been doing in this country since the 1930s. On the other hand, we could come out of this with something looking very much like the status quo. This presidential election and this congressional election is really going to decide what direction we want to take our government in. And these decisions, what we do with the payroll tax, what we do with the Bush-era tax cuts, and what we do about those automatic spending cuts, are really going to decide where we want to go with government. It's very important. Every 4 years we say this is the most important election since, but this one's going to be a very important election.
Howard Gleckman is resident fellow at the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center and a contributor to the tax policy blog TaxVox. Thanks so much, Howard.
Thanks, Monica. Great to be with you.